Public health concerns are plaguing our world's communities. From COVID-19 to type 2 diabetes, health-related issues are becoming more prevalent in countries worldwide. In fact, nearly 2 million people around the world have type 2 diabetes. Of those, almost 8 million individuals are not aware that they have type 2 diabetes. Nevertheless, this intensifying public health issue can wreak havoc on the body's systems, from hearing loss to mental anxiety. As one of the most poorly understood and treated illnesses, type 2 diabetes is more than just abnormal blood sugar control. Rather, it's a progressive disorder with long-term, severely detrimental impacts on the body. Moreover, type 2 diabetes is the leading cause of blindness, amputations, and kidney failures, making it more important than ever to access proper treatment and care procedures. My name is David, and today you're joining us for the Reading Podcast. My guest today is Dr. Sarah Kushkiri. Hi, Sarah, right?
Hi, David.
So, would you be able to tell us a bit more about your background and your research?
So, I am a medical doctor by profession, but after finishing of my medical training, I was fortunate enough to land a full-time lecturing post with Faculty of Medicine and Surgery. That's where my research kind of started. Prior to that, I had already done a postgraduate diploma and master's in diabetes with Cardiff University, so it was very clear that for my PhD, it has to be on the subject of diabetes. We lacked at the time evidence-based data on the Maltese health with special interest on diabetes. So basically, the last was called a prevalence study. It's a study which is like a snapshot of that particular period of time. We hadn't had any such study since 1981. That was, you know, quite
a long time ago.
Yeah, so from 81 till 2014-15, which was the time we're talking about when I started my PhD. Obviously, a long time have passed. A lot of things have happened, you know, cultural changes, social changes.
Socioeconomic.
Exactly. So all our data was kind of old. So it was time to update our data. And that is where, you know, my PhD kind of title evolved from.
So from 1981 to 2015, that's like almost 30 years.
Yeah, so 35 years.
Would you say our health has, like the Maltese people's health has improved from 1981 to 2015, or do we still have a long way to go?
Not so much. If you see a graph, it's actually on the incline.
Oh.
As in a worse incline. It's how like diabetes prevalence increased, so the amount of people having diabetes increased. The amount of people with hypertension increased, the amount of people with overweight and obesity status increased.
So we still have a long way to go to improve our national health.
Yeah, but it's not an easy job. There's a lot of different factors which actually point to why we're in this situation. There's genetic element, which unfortunately doesn't really help. If you have a genetic predisposition in your family that you have diabetes or obesity, it is very difficult to not get the disease. Or we can control it if you kind of, you know, pay attention, but you're more susceptible. Then again, unfortunately, we are living in a westernized diet, and even our environment is not really helping. If you go out in the community, you'll find like every corner you can find a confectionery or pastitsi, you know, not saying they are bad, but
no,
if you take them on a regular basis, unfortunately some people don't afford to buy healthy food because their means, you know, it's low means. So although we say, yes, you need to eat a lot of vegetable and fruit, if you are not, you know, financially capable to buy every day, you know, for that amount for your family, you're going to resort to high fat, saturated food,
which is cheaper, exactly.
So that's going to increase, obviously, the problem.
So let's jump straight into, you know, the more technical questions. How is type 2 diabetes different from other types of diabetes?
Well, the basis is almost always the same. So there is a problem with glucose regulation. Type 2 diabetes is usually linked to elderly, although from my study we actually found newly diagnosed diabetics from 30 years of age among the female population, and they didn't really know that they had diabetes, so they didn't really come for the health examination we were offering free of charge. They wouldn't have known, because in the initial stages it is silent.
Okay.
Because what happens is your pancreas isn't secreting enough insulin to compensate for the amount of sugar in your body.
Okay.
That is, in a simple term, what happens in diabetes. It is only when it's very kind of severe that you have no kind of enough insulin to balance out the glucose that you get symptoms. When the what you call sugar, it's a core, yattaka, so it eats the organs. So start affecting your eyesight, your heart, your nerves.
Your limbs.
Your limbs, yeah, but that's yeah. So it's only very late stage that you actually get any symptoms. So
and by that point, it's too late.
Exactly, yeah. You can't really do anything. And before actually the full-blown diabetes, you have a pre-diabetic state,
okay,
where your sugar levels isn't too high to be labeled as diabetic, but it's not normal. So that is the kind of the group, subpopulation, that ideally we target. Because if we target those population and they regulate their blood glucose, most likely a large percentage do not go to full-blown type 2 diabetes. And that is obviously very beneficial, not just for the person, but for the economy of the nation, health services, because obviously people who get really sick, we have to go to the hospital, and that's, you know, incur costs and human resources. Although obviously something that we need to point out, that not everyone who has diabetes means that they had the pre-diabetic stage. But some people will shift from normal to full blown.
Okay, so there's like a full jump.
Yeah, there's a percentage who actually jump immediately, so you can't really predict it, no.
But like if you've been identified that you have pre-diabetes at that stage, it's still controllable?
Yes.
Okay.
Just by lifestyle, most likely.
Well, that's some good news.
Yeah. Some people actually take medicines, but it all depends on the physicians who's taking care of them. But ideal first, lifestyle, if you manage to control it, very good. Just keep on going. Like, so check regularly, and you might have, you know, saved yourself from a big hurdle, you know.
So you mentioned insulin earlier. Could you tell us what's insulin exactly? What is it responsible for?
So insulin is a hormone.
Okay.
Which is secreted by the pancreas in multifreesia. And this job is basically being produced out of the pancreas when there is a sugar rush. So when you eat, the insulin will be released, and this job is to kind of transport the glucose, the sugar within the blood to different organs, to muscle, to fat cells, to liver, and obviously we need that sugar for us to function. Without sugar, we do not function. So our body won't function, our brain won't function, our heart won't function, you know. The problem is when there's this insulin do not work as it should. So
okay.
In the blood, you'll have a lot of sugar, which is kind of not being stored appropriately, not being used appropriately, and that is what causes the problem.
All right.
Because then the body won't be able to know, like, what's going to do with that sugar. And then start to deposit in the wrong organs and start doing, you know, bad things.
It's like you have an overload of sugar.
Yeah, exactly.
And is there a difference between, say, processed sugar in, say, found in canned foods and whatever, versus natural sugars found in fruit?
Well, natural sugar is easier for the body to break down because it's in simple format. And easier to kind of not get rid of it, but to get processed. When it's refined or intense, it's being modified by the humans. So it's very difficult to kind of be broken down. So you need more insulin, more process from the body. So if you have a disease, it's going to give like a shock to your body if you take a lot of this food, because it needs to work harder.
Okay, it's going to be harder to process.
In a nutshell, it's a long process, but to make it simple, you know.
Well, all right, so why has the prevalence of type 2 diabetes in Malta grown so much in the past decades?
It's not just genetics, I was telling you, because usually it's been labeled, you know, it's a genetic problem. If your mother had it, diabetes, you're going to have it. But now, I would say, especially from the study that came out from my study, that the environment and our lives actually is impinging on this problem. Because, you know, we like to sit down and do nothing. Even children, they're more likely to play on, you know,
on their phones,
on their tablets. So that's making the children stay at home, more sedentary. So increase in weight, because obviously they eat more. And there are studies that when you are sitting down and like watching the TV for a long period of time, and you're eating, your brain will tell you have eaten enough.
You're
fed up.
Going.
You just continue. You know, it's a mechanic, you know, process. Eat. Another problem, if you want to kind of pinpoint it, is that the mother who's pregnant, what she does during her pregnancy will affect the child up to adulthood.
Biologically, you mean it'll affect?
If the mother has an increase in weight, or she eating a lot of, you know, not so good, not so healthy food, it's been found that the child will develop obesity, even type 2 diabetes, early on, and will affect, obviously, the adulthood of the unborn child. So it is very important if we're going to do something, it starts from the very beginning. From preconception, the mother is fit, ideally. During pregnancy, the mother is fit again, so there's no gestational diabetes. Basically, diabetes developed during pregnancy. It doesn't mean it develops because she did something wrong, but there are some people who unfortunately will get the disease.
They're genetically predisposed to it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, it's not really their fault, is it? But it's very important during the pregnancy, the mother does her utmost to be as healthy as possible, because whatever she does will be transmitted to her child. And if the child has, you know, in utero, so in the tummy, has been exposed to a lot of sugar, a lot of fat, etc., there's a higher predisposition that during his childhood or her childhood and adulthood, he or she will be obese and most likely get diabetes. So it's a cycle.
That's insane. I had no idea that, you know, the effects could be so, you know, could start from so early on.
Yeah.
I was going to say that even, like, if as a child you used to sitting down and watching telly and eating, then these habits, they're more like to stick into adulthood. Well, that's incredible. So how might we reshape our lifestyles to avoid certain health complications?
I think this needs to be a gradual thing. It's not, you know, I wake up in the morning, say, listen, you need to increase your exercise, you need to eat healthy, because there's a lot of different factors which actually are impinging on this. You know, as we said a few minutes ago, if the family is not financially capable to sustain a healthy diet, it's not really the child's fault, is it? It's not even the mother or father's fault, in a way. Because if they are not financially able to buy, you know, for a whole week of vegetable fruits and, you know, lean meats and, you know, fish, which is, we know, it's quite expensive.
Which is ironic, because fish is so expensive.
Yeah, because we're in an island, etc. Yeah. I mean, how can they change their dietary? They know what they should do, but they are not financially capable. I was once in a talk, you know, giving a talk on obesity, etc., and an elderly couple came, talked to me after the talk, and they're like, we understand, we fully agree with you, but with our pension, we cannot afford.
I mean, this is, it's quite sad when you think about it, that people know what's healthy for them, but because of economic reasons, it's hard to actually implement them. Perhaps we should consider on a national level that healthy food is subsidized, for instance?
Different countries have been taking different initiatives. Yes, there have been countries who've given like vouchers to these socioeconomic, kind of low socioeconomic families to help them to go and buy more fruit and vegetables. So they're like subsidy because they have a voucher. Some people have introduced different taxes like sugar tax. Which will kind of, if you are buying food and drinks that have a high sugar level, you're going to be kind of taxed, so it's more expensive. We kind of think back, so water is, let's say, €1, I'm inventing right now, and whatever soft drink with high sugar level is €3.
Okay.
So, you know, if I have €2 in my pocket, you know, let's go with water rather than, you know. So different governments, different countries have taken different approaches. This is not something me kind of saying this. This is a multi-sectorial issue. So, I mean, there are strategies that have been implemented, but then again, there are other factors that will kind of impinge on it. Not just at the individual level, at the community level, at the population level. So it's a gradual thing. Mm-hmm. This, we can't just, you know, flip
snap our fingers.
Yeah, and we just change it. But it needs to be slowly, slowly ingrained in our society.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone is, you know, we are celebrating something, it's customary that we do a lot of food.
Uh-huh.
It's cultural. You know, to change that culture, it's difficult. But, you know, preaching today, tomorrow, and doing measures that will actually, you know, limit maybe the amount of things you do on a particular occasion, by time, we get there.
What are some common misconceptions which people have when they talk about type 2 diabetes?
It's a disease of the old. I feel nothing, so I will not go and check. And that is totally rubbish, sorry for saying so. Reason being, from just my, you know, humble study, the females, I found a percentage who had type 2 diabetes from a young age, from 30 years. While the same age group, the males had impaired fasting glucose, so it's the pre-diabetic state.
I see.
So they didn't know about this. They didn't feel anything. So, you know, if they didn't return up for this health examination survey, we would have never known about it. You know, 10 years down the line, Yara. You know, I have symptoms. So it's a silent disease up to the very last. So the misconception is, I don't feel anything, why should I go and check? In such a high prevalent country like we are, you know, this should be not because I feel something, I go to the doctor, but you should go, you know, on a regular basis, like, listen, you know, do a healthy checkup. Uh-huh. It doesn't cost much, but you might be safeguarding yourself from a lot of different complications and conditions.
Of course, if you know about it, you can address it. If you don't know about it, you're going to...
The other attitude is, you know, I don't want to know anything. If it comes, it comes, kind of. You know, there's a lot of this attitude, you know, unless I feel anything, I don't really want to know, which is, you know, very wrong.
Of course. I mean, my grandfather used to have this mentality of like, you know, if I don't feel anything, if I go, the doctor will find something for sure. If I don't go, then, you know, he's not going to find anything, which is a shame, really.
It is.
So what are some changes that we might make into our daily lives? What would you recommend so we can, you know?
Ideally, I mean, we kind of dedicate at least a small amount of time to just, you know, either go for a walk. You know, if you live in a condensed urban area, tell me, you know, I go out for pollution, etc. But, you know, if you can, even just go around the block, you know, just to move, or going up and down the stairs if you have stairs, mm-hmm. just to move. You know, ideally, the guidelines say that you have to do 150 minutes of exercise at least 3 times a week.
Okay.
You know, not everyone can afford that because, you know, we're busy with work, etc. But you need to make an effort.
Health should be a priority.
Exactly. And obviously eating, you know, try as much as possible. You know, if you can afford it, you know, go for a healthier option. I'm not saying, you know, don't never eat anything which is, you know, claims unhealthy. You know, mm-hmm. once in a while, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's the daily food consumption which is the problem. And, you know, if you I'm a noob, if you, you know, add something or, you know, had an occasion to kind of overeat, and the next day try to, you know, limit and maybe go for a longer walk, or, you know, try to do something to at least compensate what you've done, you know. I mean,
I assume as well that we should limit the amount of portions.
The amount should be smaller. Ideally, you have frequent meals which are in the small quantities rather than one large meal at the end of the day. Reason being, you just starved your body for, let's say, 12 hours because you didn't eat anything. Then you've eaten a very large portion. Your body says, oh yes, food is here, you know, let's store everything as fat because he's going to starve us for another 12 hours. And that's the wrong kind of, the body doesn't want that. He wants to have, you know, frequent meals as much as possible. Healthy, ideally, uh-huh. you know, not pastitsy every time, obviously. and small portions, so you don't feel starved, and then you open the fridge and, you know, you raid it with whatever you find, you know. So that's the ideal situation, and then it's not ideal for everyone because we have to be realistic. Not everyone has the time or the means of, if someone is working, let's say, in an office and or in our factory, you can't really stop every 2 hours to eat, and then you try to compensate. But
well, I mean, maybe we should, I mean, start considering that even in the workplace, like, we should be giving our health and well-being a priority.
There are workplaces actually doing that. You know, there are workplaces that are actually incorporating like a free pass to the gym as part of their package, or they have a small gym with their workplace. You know, there are private companies who actually offer this to their employees, which is very good. So they promote it, but, you know, not everyone is the same. So,
I mean, hopefully, eventually down the line, this will be the norm rather than the exception.
If we put our minds to it, we can do anything, you know. 6 months ago, we didn't really know what, you know, COVID is, what is a mask. All of a sudden, now it's become a norm that if you go out, you need to wear a mask. So, you know, this can be like a learning experience. We can, you know, adapt to a new normality. Why can't we put, you know, health, you know, other healthy issues as a new normality?
I mean, I'm glad that you mentioned COVID. I wanted to ask, so given that, you know, now people are limiting the amount of times they go out, what suggestions do you have for people who are suffering from, you know, diabetes or trying to be healthier? How can they, you know, address these changes while, you know, dealing with COVID? So, for instance, you suggested exercise, but if people are limiting the amount of times they go out, maybe that's a bit difficult for them. What can they do?
Well, there have been programs on TV just to, for, you know, keeping fit. And even if you go on the internet, you know, you can go on videos and see different exercises you can actually do at home. But that is one option. Yeah, we're small as an island, but if you can drive, you can go to a bit of a remote place, you know, around the sea. You know, walk, you know, maybe not, you know, in Slima front, but you find places, or go to a valley if the weather permits. You know, doesn't have to be every day, but if you just make it once a week, making an effort to try to find a bit of a remote, you know, place. Obviously take the mask with you, so if people are approaching, you just put it on. And swimming, although now obviously,
you know, winter is coming.
But if a person wants to do something, that I even learned it while I was doing the field work, they will do it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're determined, you want to do something, you will do it, irrelevant if there's COVID or rain or whatever. It all boils down on the initiative, on the persistence of the person, and understanding the importance behind it. Because if I go walk, you know, I can pull a hamstring, I'll end up with arthritis in the knee because I'm going up and down. And that's not the attitude.
No.
Fortunately, there is a lot of people like that, and hopefully, you know, with a lot of preaching, especially from the young generation, we change the mentality. But you know.
Well, not just preaching, I think even leading by example.
Yeah.
Ideally. I mean, I agree with you. I think that if people put their minds to it and we want to make our health a priority, then we will find a way to do it. When it comes to addressing the problem, how might we make individuals more aware of type 2 diabetes early on in life, you know?
On a general note, I think people know it's there. Is just reluctant to do anything, or, you know, finding a bit of hardness and around the way and say, you know, it's difficult. But starting from a young age, from, you know, kindergarten, primary, if it needs to be, just, you know, bringing attention to the children and saying, this is a problem. Because once you've ingrained it in the new generation, hopefully, as they become new adults and they start their own families, it's part of their, you know, culture. Or their, you know, mentality that you need to do some, you know, certain things, so, you know, for the good of a long-term healthy adulthood or whatever, you know. As I said, during prenatal period, it's very, very important, especially during those classes, you know, that pregnant women go, that, you know, I'm sure they do so, the midwives will, you know, preach this and be careful, etc., because it will affect your unborn child. So I think those should be the main focus. Obviously, those who already reach certain age doesn't mean that, you know, they can't do anything. But education alone is not enough. You know, there's a lot of campaigns going on, you know, the Directorate of Health Promotion and other entities do a lot of promotion on these issues. It has to target now the society and the culture and the infrastructure, you know, having more green areas where people actually go and, you know.
They have to have the space to actually.
Yeah. Or infrastructure for bikes, to use bikes, which is safe.
Yes.
Not in the middle of, you know, of a road. Oh, it needs to be from a culture, social environment as well, than just preaching, listen, it's very important to be healthy, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a complex disease, a complex situation. As I said before, it's a multi-sectorial approach which is required. So everyone needs to be involved as a united body to move forward.
That's perfectly true. I mean, I think, though, we can agree that it starts from the individual.
Yeah.
Like, we have to be willing to say, listen, I'm going to make my health a priority, and if that means waking up an hour earlier to go for a jog, then, you know, so be it. I'm going to push myself to do it. Well, do you have any final comments you'd like to make to our listeners, Dr. Kushkiri?
We are all humans, everyone can get a disease. It's very, very important, even if you don't feel anything, even if you're still young, you know, by going and having a chat with your doctor, you know, it's important to kind of do regular checkups. Regular means 6 months, every 6 months, you know, or 1 year, the more younger generation, just to make sure that you are healthy and there is any underlying cause. It's better to know before than too late. I think that's the main aim, because obviously our environment isn't helping us, our genetics isn't helping us, so we need to take action when we are asymptomatic, as you say, in medicine, we're not feeling anything, rather than I feel anything, something, because then it might be too late to do not to do anything, but to, you know, solve it in an appropriate and, you know, definitive manner.
Prevention is better than cure at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kushkiri.
Thank you, David, for the invitation.
Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to hear the full version of this podcast, feel free to visit um.edu.mt/think.
Our theme music is Kawaii Kitsune by Kevin McLeod, and the song in our music break was Mount Fuji by Timecrawler82.